Coming up on The Green from Delaware Public Media, our focus falls on upcoming special elections in the first state. The result in the 10th District State Senate race will decide control of the legislature's upper chamber. And so candidates' positions on dealing with the state's budget woes are front and center.
An increase in taxes or a cut in some way at this point is not going to solve our underlying structural budget problem that we have.
I wouldn't have any plans to cut K-12 education or higher education or Medicaid, transportation, corrections. I actually think we could probably even increase public assistance.
We chat with two of the three candidates in the 10th Senate District race this week. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. We also sit down with two candidates vying for an open seat on Kent County Levy Court. And in our latest Chesapeake, a journalism collaborative piece, we delve into addressing the threat of avian flu in the region. The Green, where Delaware explores its common ground, is next. But first, the news from NPR. Welcome to this week's edition of The Green. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. While election season has been over for much of the country since November, Democrats and Republicans in the first state are battling into extra innings for control over the state Senate. Lieutenant Governor Bethany Hall Long's former Middletown area seat is up for grabs, with three candidates vying for that chair. Until it's filled, the state Senate is deadlocked with 10 Republicans and 10 Democrats. And it's worth noting that Democrats have held the legislature's upper chamber for more than 40 years. Delaware Public Media political reporter James Dawson reached out to each candidate in this special election for an interview. After multiple requests, Republican John Marino declined our invitation through his campaign manager. So we bring you our conversations with the other two candidates, starting with Democrat Stephanie Hansen.
For you, what's the biggest issue facing Delawareans right now that you would like to fix if you were elected?
I think the biggest issue is jobs. We have not done nearly as good a job as we could have and should have to make sure that we have good-paying jobs for Delawareans. And that is feeling, our families feel that, when someone is unemployed or when they're underemployed. And we're seeing a lot of that now. We need to do a lot better job at job creation. And I think that I'm able to bring some good skills to the table with that, because I was in public office quite some time ago, but I've actually spent the last 16 years in private industry. And my job as an environmental attorney has been redeveloping commercial and industrial properties to bring in good jobs. And so I've actually done quite a bit of that. I know how those deals are structured. And I know what businesses and employers are looking for when they want to locate here. Really, it's fairly simple. They're looking for three things. They want a ready-made, talented workforce to draw from. They don't want to have to come here and raise their own workforce. They want you to have it already in place, so that again leads back to our school system, our colleges, and our vo-tech schools. They want to have infrastructure in place. They want to have the roads and bridges built. They want to make sure that there's water and sewer and utilities that they can access, that there's capacity in those things. And then lastly, they want to make sure that when they build something, they can actually build it and get it up and up from the ground and operating in a short period of time. Because as it currently stands right now, in too many places, particularly in Newcastle County, it can take you well over $100,000 and 2 years to get a plan approved to actually build what you want to build. And when that's the case, even if you have a ready-made workforce and you have the infrastructure in place, if it's going to take a business 2 years to get up and running, they're not going to locate here. And those are problems.
So what's the problem in your mind? Are we talking too many regulations for business owners or what?
It's the process, really. It's the number of steps that you have to go through in the process, the unpredictability of the process. And in many cases, you have agencies, for instance, with Newcastle County and DelDOT, you have agencies that really aren't coordinated to the extent that they need to be. And sometimes they are in each other's way, and that causes a big jam up. That's then felt by our small businesses and our large businesses.
The latest state revenue projections have a $350 million budget shortfall for next year. Former Governor Jack Markell, when he balanced his proposed budget before he left office, had a couple of, he had a mix of tax cuts, or rather tax increases and spending cuts. Two of the more controversial measures, at least on the cut side, were an elder property tax subsidy and also moving state employees to a less costly health insurance plan. Would you support either of those?
You know, I think at this point, we have to go through an investigative and decision-making process. And I'm not at the point yet where I'm going to be able to say, yeah, I think those are things that we need to do. Let me talk about a couple of things. Number one, you know, an increase in taxes or a cut in some way at this point is not going to solve our underlying structural budget problem that we have. It's going to be a Band-Aid on a much larger problem. And the much larger problem is that we are basing our revenue on things that are unstable. We base too much of our revenue on things that are unstable, meaning the abandoned property and lottery proceeds.
But a lot of that work has already been done. I mean, in 2015, you had both a committee on revenues and a committee on expenditures from the governor's office. Those reports have kind of sat on the shelf. General Assembly has done maybe a couple of those proposed reforms. Like you mentioned, there are structural budget problems. And two of these, the state employee health insurance and the elder tax subsidy, or just tax subsidies to senior citizens in general, are projected to cost the state hundreds of millions of dollars in the long term, exponentially growing. So those have been identified. Is that something you still want to take a look at then?
Well, yes, I would like to be able to take a look at those reports because I personally haven't seen them. You know, I want to read them myself. I'm a scientist and an attorney by training, and I don't make snap decisions. So those are things that I would definitely like to take a look at.
What about an increase to Delaware's top tax rate? That was another part of the former governor's proposal. That tax rate currently sits around 7% for those making $60,000 a year or more.
Well, I think that if an increase in tax for our wealthier citizens is something that that's worth a discussion at this point. As I said, you know, it's not something that I'm ready to jump on board for right now, but I think that that is worthy of a discussion.
Another issue that could come up this year is a bill to legalize recreational marijuana. Would you vote in favor of that?
Well, I think that we're going in the right direction. I think that with the passage of medical marijuana legalization, with the passage of decriminalizing marijuana, that we are heading in the right direction with that. But here are two things that I worry about and that I want to make sure are addressed in some way. I want to make sure that we have in place some system to know when someone is too impaired to drive and too impaired to go to work, because you don't want your surgeon showing up impaired. And for that matter, you don't want your hairdresser showing up impaired. So right now we need to take a look at how this has been implemented in other states and see what they have found, how they have addressed those problems, and then what can we do here to kind of right-size what they have for Delaware. I've spoken with Senator Margaret Rose Henry about this. I mean, she and I are on board with looking at these issues. But I think for our public safety, our road safety, we need to come to some way to tell when someone is too impaired to drive.
Yeah, and what's going to make you comfortable? Because I hear that answer all the time when I talk to politicians. It's been legal in Colorado and Washington State since 2012. Is there kind of a time frame that you would be comfortable with to see what kind of effects it's had on their culture out there?
Well, I'd like to, if it's been in effect since 2012, then that should give us about four or five years at this point of data as to what they've been able to see. And I think that's a good deal of data. So let's take a look at it. Let's see, has it resulted in an increase in car accidents? Has it resulted in an increase in malpractice, you know, against professionals for some reason? You know, let's take a look at what they have in place and how it has affected them socially.
Education has obviously been on the front burner for a couple of years now in the General Assembly. Lawmakers calling for more money to dedicate toward high poverty schools. Is that possible with our projected budget deficit as it currently stands right now, do you think?
Well, I think that one of the things that we need to take a closer look at, and that will result in the need for legislation, is to change our current school formula. Because right now what we have is a formula where the amount of funding that a school receives is based purely on the number of students that they have. And it does not take into account any special populations within that student population that is going to require additional resources. For instance, those coming from high poverty areas or those with special needs in particular.
Well, it does apply to, you get more funding if you have special needs after, well, fourth grade and
after
above.
After fourth grade,
correct.
That's true. But not below fourth grade. And then also not if you're coming from an area where there is, as we said, a high poverty rate, where you're looking at students that perhaps need some before care and even some aftercare, like wraparound services, and perhaps extra counseling as well. So with those populations in mind, I think what we need to do is go to more of a needs-based funding formula.
Thanks to Stephanie Hansen, Democratic candidate in the 10th District State Senate race, for her time this week. We'll hear from the Libertarian in the race, Joseph Lanzendorfer, next. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. Last segment, we heard from the Democrat running for the open 10th District State Senate seat, Stephanie Hansen. The Republican in that race, John Marino, declined our interview request. So we turn now to the third candidate for that Middletown area seat, vacated by Lieutenant Governor Bethany Hall Long. That's Joseph Lanzendorfer. Our political reporter James Dawson recently spoke to the Libertarian candidate about why he's running for the seat that will decide control of the state Senate, which is currently deadlocked with 10 Republicans and 10 Democrats.
This is your first political campaign, correct?
Yes, this is my first political campaign.
All right, and so could you just tell us a little bit about your background and, you know, why you decided to run for the state Senate now?
Well, I was born and raised in Delaware, aside from a few years that I lived in Texas. Philosophically, I feel like I've always been libertarian, but I think when Ron Paul ran in 2007 and really started to bring libertarianism to the mainstream. That really got my attention. And I wanted to run because instead of waiting for a candidate that I am passionate about, I thought, why not be that candidate that I'm passionate about and bring my issues to the table?
Why run as a libertarian since, you know, libertarians get a few percent of the vote here and there each election, but they haven't won any major seats here.
Well, it might be politically expedient to run on the Republican or Democratic ticket because they are the mainstream parties. But the Libertarian Party is the party that best matches my political philosophy. I'm definitely much more of a moderate libertarian. I'm definitely not an anarchist. There aren't really many parts of the government that I would want to completely abolish, but I'm libertarian because I'm very fiscally conservative and very socially liberal. And I think that the Libertarian Party now more than ever needs people who are willing to stick to it. I think part of the problem we have is if we have someone who does start to get very popular, they quickly jump ship to the Republican Party or the Democratic Party because it is political expedient. We need to retain talent within the Libertarian Party if we're going to grow.
So given that you're a libertarian, like we just talked about, which party would you actually caucus with should you be elected to the state Senate?
I've been asked this question a few times, and one of my responses is I might not caucus. I might just force them to work with me as the tie-breaking vote.
Would you be worried about, if your plan is to horse trade for your one vote, that they would just find a workaround and get Republicans to take that place instead?
But Delawareans win that way. It might not, if that were to happen, it would make my job very boring. But you can imagine how much better legislation would be for Delawareans if the Republicans and the Democrats have to work together to get around my tie-breaking vote instead of either of them having a majority in the Senate. If I had to choose a side, I might most likely caucus with the Republicans because I think that with our $350 million deficit, we definitely need some more fiscal conservative power. Aside from the issue of marijuana legalization, I agree with my opponent, John Marino, on a lot of issues. And there's also a lot of good new Republicans in there, such as Anthony Del Colo. I really like his stances, and I'm glad that he won the election recently.
Well, you just brought up the elephant in the room that the General Assembly has been considering for about a month now, the projected $350 million budget shortfall for the upcoming fiscal year. If you are elected, I mean, how exactly are you going to try and tackle that?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I was double-checking some of the figures on that, and I think we have a budget, total budget, at least in 2014, I couldn't find more recent numbers, of $9.41 billion
The current fiscal year is $4.1 billion total spend.
Really? Because last I checked, it was more closer to $9 billion for 2014. I don't think they'd cut it in half since then.
No, the total amount that the state spends in the general fund is $4.1 billion projected for this current year.
Oh, okay. So maybe I'm looking at overall, like what they get from the federal government also.
That could be possible.
Okay, so yep. I'm looking at the absolute total number was $9.418 billion. So going back to what I said about being a more of a moderate libertarian, I wouldn't have any plans to cut K-12 education or higher education or Medicaid, transportation, corrections. I actually think we could probably even increase public assistance, even as a fiscal conservative. I think that we can afford to spend 1 or 2% of our budget helping people. It's that 43.2% other, that $4 billion in the other category that I think needs to be slashed to deal with that $350 million deficit.
Well, off the top of my head, I was just sitting in budget hearings this week. Education accounts for about $1.1 billion of the $4.1 billion budget. Medicaid is $700 million, and I want to say $60 million of that for the state share of the entire thing. So you've got a gigantic chunk built into those two programs, and lawmakers are now having to figure out whether or not there are structural problems within those. So you're saying you don't want to take a look at, you know, cutting that $1.1 billion in education at all?
Well, I think education is too important. I think that we definitely need to make sure that Delawareans are getting the most bang for their buck possible. So absolutely, look at that and figure out if there are ways to more efficiently and effectively spend that money. And if through their research and figuring everything out, they do find a way to make it actually cost less without sacrificing any education, well, then absolutely, why wouldn't you do that? There's absolutely no reason not to do that. But I think that in the long run, it's more fiscally conservative to actually invest in education, because you get such a better society when you have a more educated society and a better economy.
Last year, the Delaware Supreme Court struck down the state's death penalty, and there's been talk about a bill coming to reinstate that in this General Assembly. Would you vote on that? Would you vote for it?
I would vote no. I am against the death penalty. Especially as a libertarian, I believe very strongly that the government derives its power from the people, and therefore the government does not have the power to do anything that the people do not collectively have to do, because that's what the government is. It is the collective efforts of the people. So if the people do not have the right to kill someone in retaliation for committing a crime, then the government does not either. The state should not murder people.
We also just recently had a hostage situation at James T. Vaughn Correctional Center in Smyrna. It left one prison guard dead. In your mind, what do you think needs to be done at the state level to address this? We heard from the prisoners who say we're not getting enough educational or rehab programs or reentry programs when they do get out of prison. And then prison guards say, you know, conditions aren't safe, and we want to help some of these prisoners who have mental health conditions get the treatment that they need, but we can't do that right now. So what do you think needs to be done, considering that the state doesn't have a lot of money right now projected to throw around?
Well, first of all, my thoughts and prayers go out to everyone that was involved in that situation. I was very saddened to hear that we lost a life the other day. Going back to what I said about budget and how there's 2.9% spent on corrections, and I've got no plans to cut that, that's another one of the smaller ones that we could probably afford to spend some more money on, especially if there are guards saying that it is not safe. I want to be clear, I don't condone the actions of any of the violent prisoners, but I do still agree that there needs to be reform. I think they definitely went the wrong way about trying to get that reform, obviously. But I think that we should look at prison reform for the safety of the guards. And also, I think it's important to keep in mind that prison is supposed to be for rehabilitation, not just punishment. And so there is a good point that we need to make sure that they have education opportunities and that they can be reassimilated into society, because if they do their time, then they're released back into society, they should have an opportunity to get their life back. Otherwise, they're just going to end right back up into the system.
Something else that's been getting a lot of traction in Delaware, maybe not enough to pass anything this year, has been marijuana legalization. You're for it. And what would you want to spend that money on that would come in through the tax revenue derived from legalizing marijuana?
I think it should definitely be spent on education. Ideally, I would say don't even tax it. As a libertarian, I think that people should have the freedom to buy it and sell it and smoke it. But being pragmatic about the situation, I know that it is going to get taxed. That's the reality of it. And as long as it's going to get taxed, I don't want the government simply spending that money however it wants. I want to make sure that it is earmarked for education.
Thanks to Joseph Lazendorfer, Libertarian candidate in the 10th District State Senate race, for his time this week. Again, a reminder, the Republican in this race, John Marino, declined our interview request. The 10th District State Senate special election is set for February 25th. And we'll shift our focus to another special election in Kent County Levy Court when the Green returns after a look at our local headlines from Delaware Public Media. Welcome back to The Green. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. This month's special election in the State Senate's 10th District is not the only upcoming special election locally. Some Kent County voters head to the polls next month to fill a vacant Levy Court seat. Two candidates are vying to replace Democrat Brad Eby in the 2nd District. Eby is stepping down to take a job with the state. The special election to fill his seat is set for March 21st. Delaware Public Media's James Morrison recently sat down with both of the candidates for that seat to discuss the race and the issues they're focused on. First up, his conversation with Democratic candidate Andrea Kreiner, who served as a policy advisor to former Governor Ruth Ann Minner and currently owns and operates a sustainability consulting firm in Dover.
If you would just tell people a little bit about you, your background, where you're coming from, people that may not know you already.
Sure. I moved to Dover back in the 1980s. I've actually lived in the 2nd Levy Court District for 23 years. My background is in public service. I worked for DENREC for 12 years and then at the governor's office under Governor Minner as her policy advisor on land use, environment, energy, agriculture, and transportation before starting my own consulting business.
You do have a background in sustainability, agriculture, environment. Mm-hmm. Here in Kent County, I know land management, I guess anywhere in Delaware, ends up being an issue. How are you going to try to focus on this balance between building up the cities and then having to expand and build outside of the cities?
Well, from my background and my beliefs is that having a strong downtown core is central to having a strong and vibrant community. So building up our downtowns is essential to making the county strong and to making us attractive as a place to bring in both new businesses and new residents. But as we grow and as we expand, we need to work on infill to make sure that we are filling in around these central cores so that people have access to the services they need, and also to make sure that as we do grow, that we don't just grow houses, that we need to grow communities and to have places where people can go to shop, where they can go to recreate, parks that they can bring their kids to. All of that is important, and that mix, having the accessibility of people to get to these services, is what will make Kent County even stronger.
I see, and I've seen that's how cities, counties are building now, so it's, you don't just have a bunch of houses that are 10 miles away from any kinds of services. You're building the houses, the services, and the parks with the new communities. So you're saying build the communities, not just houses.
Absolutely, absolutely. Having strong, healthy communities is one of my key issues.
I know that you've said that improving the environment can help improve business. I know a lot of people will say that, you know, the environment, business sometimes are competing issues. I'm just wondering, how can, you know, helping the environment, taking care of the environment, help business?
Number one, I am a small business owner, but my background is actually in economics. And I spent about 10 years working with businesses on reducing their waste and their pollution while saving money. Because basically, if you think about it, everything that you put out the back door, you've had to pay for coming in the front door. So if you use that efficiently, you're going to both save money and reduce waste. As an example, I worked with a company here in Dover back in the 1990s. We ended up reducing their air pollution emissions in half and saving them $70,000 a year at zero investment.
Looking forward to, I know that here in Delaware right now, state lawmakers are trying to deal with a budget deficit, $375 million, I think. And so there may be this issue of the counties, the cities, local governments having to pick up more costs, and maybe this issue of having to raise taxes or cut services. How will you try to strike that balance moving forward, working with other members of Levy Court as well, if you may be faced with these tough decisions of having to possibly cut services?
Well, one thing we don't want to do is cut services. We need to work with the state to make sure that what costs are sent to the county, if any, are reasonable and they make sense for the county to be paying. There are costs that make sense to be borne at the state level and costs that make sense to be borne at the county level, and we need to make sure that Kent County's residents are not unduly burdened by the state's budget deficit.
Another issue, too, is your opponent, he's a former police officer. How would you address these voters that may be really focused on crime and worried about things like drugs, shootings, robberies? You say that they would prefer to maybe have someone with a police background in this position.
Well, actually, Kent County Levy Court, our role in public safety is to handle the 911 call centers and the paramedics. We do not have a county police force. That issue actually is best handled at both the city and the state levels, but we need, as county commissioners, to work with the state and the city to make sure we have effective programs to reduce crime.
I see. So it would be at the county level, just making sure that the city, that they have all of the resources they need to deal with this.
Correct. It would be supporting the city in their efforts.
Also, too, your opponent, he is currently a council member for the city of Dover, holding elected office. And you have a lot of experience in government, but also it's my understanding that this would be your first elected position, too. How would you bring your experience in government to this position?
Through my years in government and with my consulting business, I've developed strong relationships at all levels of government, both at various different state agencies, in the state legislature, with county and local governments across the state. So I will bring those relationships and the ability of knowing how to work through the systems to bear to help my constituents.
I see. And then also an issue, too, is that when you look at Kent County Levy Court, it's been kind of an all-male game for a while. And I know with Hillary Clinton running for president, there was this debate of whether, you know, being a woman actually matters or not. Do you think that it matters to be able to have a female perspective on Kent County Levy Court?
I think the more diverse the perspectives are on Levy Court, the better, whether it's female or other minorities. I think bringing that to bear, bringing a woman onto court would be the first step in diversifying the court. Half of the county is women, and right now there are no women on Levy Court. I'm not running as a woman. I'm running on my qualifications to serve as a commissioner. The fact that I'm a woman and bring another perspective, I think, is an added benefit.
What are some of the issues that you want to be able to tackle that you're passionate about if you do assume this role on Levy Court?
The most important issue to me is that our young people have good quality jobs for when they get out of either high school or Del Tech or university. I mean, we have young adults in their 20s and 30s who are needing to leave the county because they don't have good jobs to support their new families. And we need to focus our economic development efforts to bringing in jobs like IT jobs and other solid manufacturing jobs, maybe it's technical manufacturing, and to have the training for our students that will make them able to fill those jobs and use that as a way to bring in more companies.
I see. So you'd like to see people maybe going to high school, college, and then being able to find a career right here in Kent County and not having to leave to fulfill these roles. Maybe you have to go start a family somewhere else because that's where the jobs are.
Absolutely. I mean, we don't want to, as you can say, age out our county by having our young people leave either out of high school to go in search of a job or, you know, go away to college and not come back.
Okay. And is there any other issue, too, besides the trying to keep people here in Kent County focused on jobs here as well, that you see also facing the county that you would like to deal with or may have to confront?
In line with creating the jobs is supporting our small businesses and farms, because small businesses are the main job creator. They are going to be the key to growth in the county. Our farms, the success of our farms is key to our rural culture that people love so much about Kent County.
Andrea Kreiner, thanks so much for speaking with me.
Thank you.
That was Delaware Public Media's James Morrison speaking with Andrea Kreiner. She is the Democratic candidate running in the special election for Kent County Levy Court's 2nd District. Stay with us. We have our interview with the Republican candidate in that race, James Hosfeldt. That's next on The Green here on Delaware Public Media. You're listening to The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. Last segment, we heard from the Democrat running to fill the vacant 2nd District seat on Kent County Levy Court, Andrea Kreiner. This segment, we turn to the Republican in that race, James Hosfeldt, a former Dover police chief and a current Dover City Council member. Delaware Public Media's James Morrison sat down with Hosfeldt recently to discuss the race and the issues he sees as vital to Kent County voters.
You're a current council member here in Dover and a former police chief for the city. But people who may not know you, just tell us a little bit about yourself, your background.
Sure. I appreciate it. Me and my wife came here in 1980. I was with the Air Force at the time and traveled around a little bit. I was stationed here, was stationed in Korea and South Dakota. Ultimately, we just fell in love with the area. We came back and settled here in Dover, Delaware, both of us originally from Western Maryland. So it was somewhat close to home, but gave us a chance to be on our own. And with the Air Force till 1987, at that point, it was really a chance encounter. I had met who was then the police chief, Jim Hutchison, and who currently serves with me on council. And we met and kind of told me, if you come down, you pass the test, I'll hire you. And he certainly held to his word. I passed the test, and 26 years later, I retired as a chief of police with the city of Dover. Retired from Dover and went to work for Dover International Speedway. I'm the director of public safety and track operations at the Speedway. So I manage not only both the NASCAR races, but I also manage the public safety side of the house, and that'd be fire, EMS, law enforcement, security for Firefly Music Festival.
So you've been here a long time, and I also read, too, that you're big on getting out and talking to the voters as well. What are voters telling you that are important issues for them?
At this point, we've been talking to, doing a lot of neighborhood walks, and, I leave work and go do the same thing throughout the city and throughout the county. But the thing I'm hearing most of our county residents are concerned with public safety, just as the city residents are. So that's a familiar familiar tale for me. It's easy for me to talk about. It's something I understand. Having been in law enforcement with the city of Dover, obviously we work with all the other law enforcement agencies in the county as well. You just have to do that because there's not enough of us to go around. So whether it's working with Delaware State Police or Felton Police or Harrington, whoever it may have been at the time, you certainly get a handle for the crime trends, and you understand, what it is that's going on in and around Kent County and the city of Dover as well. For the county, though, not only is it's not law enforcement, but it's the paramedic service, it's the emergency management service, the 911 center. When you pick up that phone and you call 911 because you need help, you expect somebody to answer you on the other end. And that's the important piece with Kent County and the 911 center. So public safety, we're also hearing about land use issues, you know, common sense land issues. You know, it's one thing if you buy a home in a development and it has rules and regulations, you know, bylaws that you go by to live in that association's neighborhood. But then I think it's somewhat a little bit different if you buy a piece of land or you're a farmer and you have your own land. You know, I think those people should have the right to do with their land as they see fit. I don't want to see government intrusion in those areas.
Just backing up a little bit, getting into your background in law enforcement as a former police chief, what you're saying is that you'll be able to use your connections that you've made within the cities and your understanding of crime issues in the area to be able to help fight crime and prevent crime, even though being on the county level, you'll be a bit further removed from the Dover Police Department or the local police departments.
Yeah, I think that's important. You know, obviously, I don't expect that, you know, once elected that I would come in and set the tone. I think Commissioner Pepper's done a great job with the public safety side of the house. You know, in my former capacity and, you know, my knowledge in that area, I see, you know, another voice come in and help, you know, and is a sounding board, if you will, throw some new ideas out there possibly. But to be very honest with you, you have to be pretty impressed with the services that Kent County has provided through the emergency management or 911 center and the paramedic program. So I work with everybody up and down the state, and that program's second to none. So what I can do to help and foster that relationship and continue that obviously is important to me. I think the other issue when you talk about public safety is the volunteer fire service. You know, that. How fortunate is Delaware? You know, I think we're the only capital of the 50 states that has a volunteer fire service. And you look at all the surrounding areas, whether it be Canada, Wyoming, Hartley, Cheswold, whoever it may be, South Little Creek or Little Creek. You know, these departments are key to the safety of our residents. And obviously we want to see that continue, you know, whether it's, you know, through the county appropriations money that goes out to our, I think we have 18 different fire companies and one ambulance company that some support is received through those county appropriations money. So we want to see that continue. And obviously a lot of things are in question when we talk about funding, you know, especially with, you know, the things that we're all worried what the state may try to do or end up doing to us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that was a question I was going to ask too, with this budget deficit on the state level of around $375 million. I think at the county level, the state level, most levels, we may be faced with the possibility of having to cut services or find new revenue sources, even raise taxes. You know, how would you approach a problem like this if you are faced with that?
Well, here's the thing. I think we need, as a group, obviously the county and the cities work together with the Delaware League of Local Governments. So, you know, we have to, as a group, you know, get together and formulate a plan and obviously have reach out and have conversations with our state legislators to let them know how important some of these programs are to us. I mean, if we take a look, just let's look at the paramedic program, the 30-70 split that's been discussed and thrown around in the paper a little bit. I mean, that's a difference of approximately $1.5 million to the county. So there's $1.5 million that we have to find. Or have to come up with as a county or offset that somehow. So those are concerns. If we look about the real estate transfer tax, I mean, we could be talking about probably in the ballpark of $850,000. So now we're almost at $2.5 million of unfunded sources that we never had before. So it's a concern, obviously, to me as a city councilman currently, but it's also going to be a huge concern as a county resident because I pay taxes here just like everybody else. I have always considered myself a fiscal conservative. I think that the good thing about that, people can refer to my voting record as a city councilman, and that will certainly back up my statement as being a fiscal conservative.
Okay, and I just have one final question, and I know you talked about crime being one of the major issues that people are worried about, and then also land management being one of the issues that you're hoping to tackle. Is there anything else that rises to the top of your agenda that you'd hope to focus on Levy Court?
You know, the big thing for me, and it's, you know, I've been in public service, whether it be the Air Force or the police department, and my whole life, it's about constituent service to me. I love getting out. I love working with people if they have issues and they have concerns or problems, if you will. You know, to me, it's important that I help them solve those issues. I've been able to do that as a city councilman. You know, I just, you know, that's basically, you know, to be very honest with you, that's what I've been raised to do. That my whole family is in public service. My wife's a school teacher. My daughter's a nurse. My son serves in the Air Force. So that's what we know. It's what we do. We're very proud of our service, and we just hope to continue that at a much bigger level with the county now. And the good thing about that, the majority of the city resides within the 2nd District Levy Court area. So not only do I get to continue serving the citizens of Dover, but now I get to reach out and branch out and help more people within the county of Delaware, Kent County.
Jim Hosfeld, thanks for speaking with me today about this.
No problem. Thank you. I appreciate the offer.
That was Delaware Public Media's James Morrison speaking with James Hosfeld. Hosfeld is the Republican candidate running in the special election for Kent County Levy Court's 2nd District. That special election is scheduled for March 21st. And the Green continues in a moment with our latest piece from Chesapeake, a journalism collaborative, which looks at the threats avian flu presents in our region and some efforts to address that threat. You're listening to Delaware Public Media. Thanks for spending time with us on The Green this week. I'm Tom Byrne. The Delmarva Peninsula lies under the Atlantic Migratory Flyway, the path waterfowl migrate through. And as Europe deals with recent outbreaks of a severe strain of avian influenza, some local poultry growers are worried just one infected bird passing through our region using that flyway could contaminate and kill whole flocks of chickens. But as Delaware Public Media's Katie Pikus reports for Chesapeake, a journalism collaborative, work is being done to avert that scenario and its potential financial repercussions.
Before Georgie Cartanza can check on her chickens, she has to disinfect.
So there's the dry queen, so you'll step in that.
Step in that, all right.
Yes. So now we're entering into the poultry area, so we follow those extra steps.
Stepping in chlorine, applying hand sanitizer, and wearing a disposable bodysuit are all part of biosecurity to protect chickens at Cartanza's Dover, Delaware farm from disease, including deadly strains of avian influenza. Delmarva has not seen a fatal case of bird flu in over 10 years, but the devastation it could bring keeps farmers like Cartanza on their toes.
The reality is right now, we kind of go with the mindset that it's here. And we've got to prevent it from getting in here. We assume that any migratory bird can be a carrier of it.
Delaware State veterinarian Heather Hurst says with a highly fatal form of avian flu now in Europe and the Middle East, that's the right approach.
Wild birds migrate and they can carry the virus in their feces. And so wherever they fly over, they can introduce the virus into domestic poultry. Just because right now the highly pathogenic flu is in Europe and the Middle East, it doesn't mean that those birds can't travel over here this winter or next winter and spread the same virus to our birds.
Maryland State veterinarian Michael Radabaugh says an avian flu outbreak in the 4,700 chicken houses across Maryland, Virginia, and Delaware could shut down the region's $3.2 billion poultry industry and even close trade overseas.
It only takes one duck that is infected with this virus who's not showing any signs, a gram of fecal material from that duck that's infected with the virus can spread to a million birds.
So understanding the comings and goings of waterfowl is crucial. And that's what University of Delaware and University of California Davis researchers are trying to do. They're using weather surveillance radar to chart migration, following waterfowl like a meteorologist watches precipitation moving.
One idea is that we could use it to basically have like a risk threat assessment based on when and where the waterfowl are located in certain areas. That could alert farmers to know your farm is at a high risk now because there are waterfowl located near your farm.
That's University of Delaware Wildlife Ecology Professor Jeff Bueller. His group's research is mostly being done in California, but this past summer they did a trial run in Delaware.
We identified sort of 6 hotspot locations of where waterfowl tend to congregate here in Delaware.
One of those is Bombay Hook, just 10 miles from Cartanza's poultry farm in Dover. Another hotspot is the Choptank River along Maryland's eastern shore. Bueller says it's the first time weather radar data is being used in this way. And Georgie Cartanza says it sounds like it could help.
We may learn the behaviors of the birds. It may also help us, to me, track if the Midwest has had an outbreak and it was as devastating as it was, what was different about the pattern of those birds that it didn't get here.
But Bueller points out the avian flu virus isn't only spread by waterfowl. Other species that travel between wetlands and farms, such as mice and rats, can carry the virus from waterfowl to chickens. And Bueller's team would like to study that next, in an effort to keep farms in Delmarva like Cartanza's and the region's poultry industry aware of the possible spread of avian flu. I'm Katie Pikus for Chesapeake, a journalism collaborative.
Thanks, Katie. And a reminder that Chesapeake, a journalism collaborative, is funded by the participating stations with grant support from the Clayton Baker Trust, the Bancroft Foundation, Michael and Ann Hankin, the Jim and Patty Rouse Foundation, the Rob and Elizabeth Tyler Foundation, and the Midshore Community Foundation. And that's a wrap on this week's edition of The Green. The stories and interviews you've heard are online right now at DelawarePublic.org. Just head to The Green's page on our website. You can also check out The Green via podcast on our website and on iTunes. We'd also like to hear from you. Give us your feedback and story ideas on our Facebook page, on Twitter at TheGreenDE, or by emailing us at TheGreen@DelawarePublic.org. Thanks to all those who helped make today's show possible, Delaware Public Media's James Dawson, James Morrison, and Katie Pikus, as well as our president and station manager, Casey House. For all of them and the rest of the staff here at Delaware Public Media, I'm Tom Byrne saying thanks for joining us, and we'll see you again next week on The Green, where Delaware explores its common ground.